The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. Happy 2018. Hope you and yours were safe and had a great, great holiday time. Peter King will be with us in about 15 minutes, coming up at 10:20-ish, 10:25, thereabouts. The departure yesterday from Bruce Arians, the football games last night, not the Alabama-Clemson game. That was not much of a game. It was almost like overkill to try to sit there for seven straight hours. ASU U of A down in Tucson on Saturday night. It's been a great week. Eric was over at the Fiesta Bowl. I went down to the Cactus Bowl to see Josh Rosen hold a clipboard. I mean, there's been so much stuff going on here in our great state of Arizona, and we have plenty of content up on our website that you can check out at sports360az.com. Sports360az.com, where Arizona-centric, pro college high school, things in between, things that we see. They're just a little different off the beaten path. Our audience was up 30%. 30% in 2017, thanks to you. And we really appreciate that. We are self-funded. We appreciate those who sponsor us and believe in what we're doing as we continue to do it here in 2018. Let's get to some of the things off the top of my head here on this show, brought to you by the good people at Sagicor. Guys, you need to take care of your life insurance here at the start of 2018. This is the time where people start looking at all of their business. They look at everything and say, you know what? I've got this in place. I don't have this in place. I messed up here. I don't have something done there, or it's just time to look at everything top to bottom, right? Things in life, they do change. And if you checked out your life insurance, go to SagicorNow.com. Protect what matters most. You got to take care of your family, and that's with Sagicor. We appreciate Sagicor and their support. Check out your life insurance options and your ways to go there at SagicorNow.com. We're not going to do the whole show on Bruce Arians, but we're going to do quite a bit of it on where we're going to go from here. This was not a surprise. Anybody who says that this is a surprise was just hoping and wishing. There's a few things here. In late October, I had a couple of people inside the league that sent me text, Bruce Arians is gone. You can go ahead and go on the air with it, and I refuse to do so. One of them I really trusted implicitly. The other one is kind of hit and miss. And to be quite honest with you, I just never circled back to try to dig deeper on this. And they're going to deny it anyways. I think ABC 15 did go with it. I think Craig Fooey went with it way back in October that Bruce was gone. But I think just the feel of the team, the organization, this is not disrespecting Bruce Arians. Okay, when you go 7-8-1 and you go 8-8, you're going to have questions. That's just the way the league is. So when you're 15-16-1 in 2 years, it's not like you've done anything to warrant staying here, but he had his health issues in training camp in August of 2016. And so that has been hanging over the head of the organization for the last year and a half. I would find it very hard to believe that Michael Bidwell, I've always said this, that people in positions of leadership, doesn't matter if it's Michael or Steve Keim or if it's myself or whatever your business is, you always have to be prepared for the unexpected. You have to have five names in the top desk drawer in case something happens, especially in pro sports. You cannot sit here if you're the, and in college sports too. You know, Herm Edwards, just because he's now the coach at ASU doesn't mean Ray Anderson cannot have five names in his top desk drawer. Same thing goes with Dave Hickey down at U of A. Sean Miller decides he's had enough. You got to have people in place. You can't just suddenly one day wake up. It's why you see these places go out and hire search firms and throw money at them, because they're not prepared. So I'm sure with what happened yesterday, if I'm to believe the broadcast on Fox on Sunday, and I have no reason to not believe it, that Bruce Arians met for the first time about this with Michael Bidwell that morning, Sunday morning in Seattle. I don't know if I totally would buy into that. Michael can't possibly have just sat around and, yeah, well, you know, Bruce is our coach. Bruce is our guy. There's just been too much smoke for too long of a period of time. And so I know there's some people in our industry that are really upset that Bruce Arians told a fib. Here is Bruce Arians' opening statement. This was yesterday. And he becomes very, very emotional, and he admits that he did let people know before yesterday when he met with the media.
I told our team last night I was done. I'm retiring. Excuse me. and they lied to you because of that. And there's no greater feeling in the world than you know your players have your back. It's been a great ride. Told you before, there would be reasons. Family is a big one. And I will miss the game. Probably one of the hardest things for me this year was sitting at the lake this summer. And Chris said, you know Jake's going to be 40? And, I mean, it hit me like a ton of bricks that that I missed all that time. And that's coaching. I told our team last night.
So there's some of Bruce. Steve Keim then talked about, and this was all emotion-packed, emotion-charged. Here it is, New Year's morning. Most of you are probably asleep, not even aware this is going on. You may just be waking up after the last couple of days in Vegas. I don't know. Here was Steve Keim. Eric was there yesterday to get this. This is Steve Keim on Arians retiring.
Oh, you can tell it's gotten hard not to be choked up. You know, I don't think there's any doubt it's going to be hard to replicate the kind of relationship we all had with Bruce and how special he was to us. We had some special moments, a lot of wins, and battled through adversity together. And there's no doubt that he'll always hold a special place in my heart.
So the emotion side of it, you go through yesterday and you go through the process and you look back on the Cardinals' run under Bruce Arians and what can you say? There were thrilling times for sure. There was the loyalty to assistant coaches that had you scratch your head or just flat out say, come on, this isn't working out, move on. You also had him being adaptable to bringing in players that Steve Keim, and I'm sure that there was the agreement, and does anybody think that there was ever a disagreement? And I don't know, I'm not in that room, but I completely find it 100% impossible to believe these two are always on the same page. It just doesn't happen in sports. I'm going to draft this player, and I believe this player can play for us. And the player comes in, and he can't play. I'll use Logan Thomas as an example. Logan Thomas from Virginia Tech, a quarterback, fourth-round pick they burned on him, couldn't play. Didn't make it work. Not a bad kid, just didn't work out. But for the most part, they stayed in their lanes during this run. And that's why, when I say run, the last 2 years, I think it had run its course. I had used the word stale on this show many times here in the last couple of months. Did the defense perform better? Yeah, they did. They did, certainly. The numbers were terrific in the last 6 weeks of the season. Nobody can deny that. But the special teams were never special here. They weren't. Offensively, there were more misses than hits. The offensive line was always in a state of flux. Now, is that because there's not enough time to coach up players, that players come out of college and they're really not adjusted to the pro style of game? They're in a two-point stance. They're all playing the spread offense. And the whole idea of offensive line play has changed. Yeah, you can make that argument, and I would buy into that. But the last 2 years, this just didn't feel like something that was heading in the right direction as a complete all three sides of the field. Offense, defense, special teams. It just wasn't happening. And so I'm very happy Bruce Arians has found his peace and is going to find time to be with his family. He's accomplished a ton. He will do well in whatever he decides to go do. If John Gruden, in fact, leaves Monday Night Football and goes to the Raiders, I could see Bruce Arians in some capacity in a three-man booth. We'll talk about that as the show moves on. But up next, Peter King. Peter King's reaction to what happened out here yesterday. The Monday morning quarterback, Peter King, none better in covering the NFL and Peter King from the MMQB. That is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now let's go deeper into Bruce Arians' departure from the Arizona Cardinals and what is next. Is this really a great job of all the coaching openings and much, much more with Peter King, the Monday morning quarterback? Always good to catch up with Peter. You can check out his podcast, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and of course, follow him on Twitter. You were not surprised by this, I'm guessing, Bruce Arians' departure, or were you, Peter?
No, I was not surprised. You just sort of felt it coming. It just seems like it's time, Brad. If you're going to draft a new quarterback, which I'm sure they're going to do this year, and if you're going to really sort of blow up your offense and start anew, then I think you should do it with another coach. You shouldn't do it with a guy who might only stay 1 year. And I mean, at most, might stay 1 year. And listening to what Bruce said at his press conference and then reading the Bruce/Lars Anderson story in The Athletic, I mean, you know, again, this is not in any way to say, yeah, Bruce, move along, we'll get another guy. But knowing what's going through his head, mm-hmm. you know, if I were the owner of the Cardinals, I would say, you know, we need to get another coach. Because obviously Bruce Arians, who's had health scares and, you know, is having this great angst now at this point in his life about how much he's missed in his family's life. I mean, would you expect that a guy like that would be getting to the office at 5 a.m. and staying till 10 at night?
Right.
I mean, so it's time. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I totally applaud. This guy has totally thrown himself into every coaching job he's ever had. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, but there comes a time in your life where you say to yourself, and I applaud him for doing so, where you say to yourself, is that all there is?
Yeah, my son's turning 40, and I've got to get to my son. I mean, that line alone got me choked up. I don't know about you, Peter, but there was a lot in that where he's showing so much emotion. And that's what made Bruce Arians so great and loved by his players out here.
I started my podcast last year, and I called Mark Dalton, the PR guy of the Cardinals, and I said, I want Bruce Arians to be one of my first guests. Mm-hmm. And he was. Bruce Arians was he was on my inaugural list, like the first three or four guys.
Right.
John Elway, Bruce Arians. I mean, I forget who, but I mean, you know, the biggest guys in football. And the reason is because every time you ask Bruce Arians a question, you're going to get a good answer. And I just really became, look, over the years, I've really enjoyed him. I'll never forget this. You know, I had such, over the years, going back to when he was in Pittsburgh, I would talk to Arians, and, you know, he goes to Indianapolis, and he has this incredible year, okay? And the one thing that stands out in my mind is when Bruce Arians said, and it was a team decision, you know, when Bruce Arians said, when Chuck Pagano goes away and he's got to get treated for leukemia, and Bruce is going to be the coach of the team. And Bruce tells me, he said, hey, we are not turning the light off in Chuck Pagano's office till he gets back in it. Mm. And it was just one of those things that, look, you know, and Bruce was coach of the year that year. It was incredible. But he kept talking about Chuck Pagano. I'm keeping the seat warm for him. Pagano is my guy and all this stuff. He would never take the credit that he deserved. And the one other thing at the end of that year, I will never forget this. He gets hired by the Cardinals. And I say to him, I say, hey, Bruce, I said, you just won coach of the year. And there are eight openings. And only one team offered you a job. You know, and you're the coach of the year, and you're on the market. And so, and he said, you know, and he absolutely loved when he met with Michael Bidwill and he met with Steve Keim. He found, these are guys who I know I could work with. And he loved being there. So, and he said to me that night, he said, Peter, it only takes one. And I'm going to make sure they made the right choice. And look, the next 3 years, just my opinion, got to be the best 3 years in total since this team moved to Phoenix, in 1988, I guess. But it was fun. Every game was an adventure.
Right.
You know, and even the last 2 years, how many great Sundays have there been the last 2 years, even when they've been basically a mediocre team, a 500 team? But that's because every game when Arians was on the sidelines, you knew, no matter who was the quarterback, you were going to have a chance and something cool was going
to
happen.
Well, and that leads me, Peter, to this on a legacy point with Bruce Arians. You know, when I was growing up in San Diego, I had the privilege of covering Sid Gillman and having him on my show often, and Don Coryell, and seeing the Air Coryell era. And then I get over here later in my career and I see Bruce Arians, and this is throwback type stuff. But when I'm talking about great offensive minds, Bruce Arians would have to be near or at the top of the list. The guy worked with Peyton and Roethlisberger and Luck and Carson. So I've had people today send me notes saying, do you think that he is a Hall of Famer? And I said, I will ask Peter this because you sit in the room. Is Bruce Arians a Hall of Fame coach because of everything, his whole body of work?
I think he's a very interesting case because as a head coach, there's no way he'd be a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. But as a body of work coach, he'd be interesting. And it reminds me, over the years, we have had discussions as a Hall of Fame voting group about assistant coaches and about coaches who may have been assistants for a long time and got one shot at being a head coach and did okay, but didn't. I mean, sort of what Bruce Arians has done. And I think it's a really, really interesting question, and I think it's a valid question. I think too often we sort of lean on only head coaches when you talk about coaches. But man, the amount of coaches in the game, and you look at Dick LeBeau.
Right.
Sure. I was so happy to see Dick LeBeau recognized and rewarded. But LeBeau was a kind of a different case. LeBeau's on the top 10 of the all-time interceptions list. You know, he played more consecutive games at cornerback than any corner in NFL history. He played a side night train lane. I mean, he was a good, good NFL player. And so, you know, even though we're only supposed to factor in the playing part of it when we considered Dick LeBeau at that time, I'm sorry. I just, you know, I don't mean to say I'm breaking the rules, but I don't see how you consider Dick LeBeau as a candidate for the Pro Football Hall of Fame without considering it as an umbrella award.
Sure.
And so, and that's why I think guys like Bruce Arians are interesting and compelling discussions for that aspect of the Hall.
Before I let you go, Peter King with us, look at this job, Peter, and so far the names have been assistant coaches, coordinators. Is there a name that catches your eye on this list, A? And B, is this a good job because of the instability at quarterback and Larry Fitzgerald's situation? If you're a coach that's looking at where I have a chance to go win right away, obviously this isn't Cleveland, but is this a good position for someone to come to, A? B, what do you think happens out here?
I don't have any idea what's going to happen. I really don't. I think James Betcher would be a good candidate for this job. You know, Andy Benoit of our staff at the MMQB wrote a really good story on Monday about, you know, he might not be Sean McVay, but among the sort of the under the radar slash unknown guys this year, his favorite is James Betcher.
Mm.
You asked the great question, Brad. I mean, if I'm interviewing for this job, A, I think it's a great job. Fans pack the place. The defense is really good. You're going to be competitive opening day. But in my opinion, I think one of the things that Steve Keim is going to have to do is he's going to have to go out and he's going to have to troll for the best offensive minds. You know, I've seen them connected to John DeFilippo, the quarterback coach in Philadelphia. He's been talked about a lot. And I think right now when you look at this job, okay, I think it's a job you can be very competitive opening day, but it's a job that the only way you're going to win is to develop a good young quarterback and have him turn into your Garoppolo.
Right.
And so that's what needs to happen. Whoever is going to bring that out, and I have no idea, for instance, you know, if they even regard James Betcher as a legitimate candidate, but I would want to know who would be his coordinator. Like, I think there's some really good guys out there. I think, for instance, as a teacher of the position, Mike McCoy is out there. He's really, really good, in my opinion. And there are other good offensive guys out there who are going to shake loose depending on who gets all these jobs. Jim Bob Cooter may be available, the Detroit guy. But I would want to know what his idea was about all the other guys on his staff, particularly the guy who is going to take your quarterback for the next 3 or 4 years and really teach him how to play in the NFL.
Yeah, you mentioned Sean McVay, Peter. I think I've heard the college cycle is not complete yet, that some college names may surface out here. And a guy like Sean McVay came out of nowhere and has shown you can have the young coach come in and be the hot guy and get things turned around in a hurry with the right quarterback.
Kind of a weird year for college guys, though, because I keep hearing that Chris Peterson does not want to come out now, the Washington coach. And David Shaw has told people recently that he doesn't want to come out right now, if ever. David Shaw, far and away, right, in my opinion, if David Shaw were available right now, including all the NFL candidates, he'd be number one on my list.
Yeah, and I'd be right there with you, and you would hope Michael Bidwell would go down that path. I appreciate your time and insight, as always. Peter, thanks.
Take care, Brad. Happy New Year.
Right back at you. There's Peter King, the Monday Morning Quarterback, joining us via Skype from his home in New York City. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismat. We're going to talk more about Steve Keim here in a second, but in his next direction in leading the team. I say Steve Keim, I'm moving on from Bruce Arians. There'll be plenty of time on these shows ahead to talk more about Arians, but I think now focuses on Steve and Michael. But I found myself last Saturday in Tucson for the U of A-ASU basketball game. Guys, we have a really good story here to tell. Like the next few weeks leading up until the Waste Management Open and then the NFL Combine and National Letter of Intent Day, there's a ton that's going on here in the Valley. And it's great. We love the fact that there's so much going on. It's not just, the Cardinals didn't make the postseason and now what? No, there's tons of stuff. And I'm in Tucson the other night. Jordan Hamm and I went for the ASU U of A game. We get down there about 2.5 hours early. We go to dinner. We go over to Old Chicago. Nice spot. Been there lots of times during the Diamondback days when they had spring training down there. Destroyed some brain cells down there back in the day and had a great time. Great time doing all that stuff. And I'm sitting there at the table with Jordan, and the place is packed with U of A fans. And a guy comes up to our table, and he's like, "Tickets, tickets, you guys need tickets. How much? We're at dinner." Eric, have you been, your college football side at TCU, you don't have scalpers walking up to you at a dinner establishment scalping tickets, do you?
No.
That seemed rather odd to me.
I've never heard of that. And U of A tickets are pretty hard to come by. I wonder why that guy was going into restaurants. He could probably just stand in front of the arena and get rid of those tickets against a really good ASU team quite quickly.
I have no idea, but you see things all the time in sports. It's like, that's never happened. And then the game, I know you didn't see it because it's Pac-12 Network, and I'll get the ratings on it tomorrow because that'll be interesting to me. That was the biggest game on Pac-12 Network in got to be the last couple years at least, because they never show like the UCLA-USC games or the Washington-Washington State. It's like Northwestern Illinois State against Oregon State on the Pac-12 Network.
I found out, Brad, you may already know this, but I found out the reason why the ESPN family does not pick up any Pac-12 games the first week of Pac-12 play in basketball is because they want to give exclusivity to bowl week.
I believe that.
So that is the reason why you won't see any Pac-12 games, and that's the reason why Arizona State was on the Pac-12 Network.
So it was really it was a great game, Eric. The atmosphere, I'm down on the floor looking at DeAndre Ayton from me to you. Like, Eric sits about 15-18 feet away from me when we do this show, and I'm about that away from DeAndre Ayton, and he's out there. I love going out on the floor an hour and a half before the game and seeing players. The fans aren't in the building yet. And what happens is players will go out on the floor and they'll have a coach with them and they will practice. The bigs will practice their low post moves and their footwork. Me being a big, though I'm no good and have no knees anymore, but back in the day, I loved being out there dripping sweat hour after hour working with coaches on trying to perfect my footwork. They couldn't help me jump any higher, but at least work on my footwork. So I'm out there watching all the drills that DeAndre Ayton is going through. And this kid, and he is a kid still. Oh my gosh, he's huge. He's so different than Marvin Bagley in terms of players. Like when it comes to draft time this year, for some reason, the Suns have gone out and won, I think, 5 of their last 8 games. I don't know why they're winning games, because you need Ayton or you need Bagley. You don't need to go out and finish with the 15th pick in the draft, just outside the lot. You don't need to do that. Lose. But not these guys. Nope, they've got it all figured out. So I'm watching Ayton, and he's just dripping buckets of sweat, and he's working his tail off, and he's mad at himself off his footwork, and it's not just a big kid that can dunk. And so it was thrilling for me. I got this juice going on inside of me. I told Jordan, I said, this is so great. This is what it's all about. And I'm talking to assistant coaches, and Kyle Dodd and I are hanging around, the color analyst for ASU, and I see Brian Jeffries. I go over and visit with Greg Hansen and Bruce Pascoe and the whole U of A contingent. And it's just a bunch of hoop nerds. It's kind of like probably going to what is that comedy thing that they do every year where you dress up with all the acts? What is it they do, Eric? What's the name of that? Jared would know. What's the name of that where they dress up and they do the – it's like a comedy convention. Comic-Con. It was like Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It was like Comic-Con. That's what it was. It was Comic-Con for basketball.
I'm thinking of some tiny little venue in the East Valley where people dress up. Yeah, Comic-Con's kind of a big deal.
Did I just throw Jared under the bus? Comic-Con. I think I threw Jared under the bus. It was like Comic-Con. We're geeking out. Or CES is going on this week up in Vegas, Consumer Electronics Show. It's kind of like that, where you're geeking out on basketball. And I was so into my element. Loved it. Game didn't disappoint. ASU looked really good. U of A looked better. U of A had way too much inside. Ristic was the difference maker in the game. And so, you know, you go through all this and U of A wins the game. U of A wins. But it wasn't by much, and it was so close. And for those of us that have watched U of A just destroy ASU through the years, this is what it should be like. This was an actual rivalry. So afterwards, here's some of the comments afterwards from Sean Miller, Bobby Hurley, and others on what was a terrific game. Look at that.
Well, they're a really good team. I mean, we're not going to beat them by 20 points, 10, 15 points. I mean, for us to win that game going away, you know, a lot of things would have had to really fall in place. The difference between the two teams isn't big enough for that game to go that direction. You know, it was hard fought the whole time, and that's why they were undefeated coming into our game.
My message to my team was that I thought we battled as hard and we had the will, you know, to win that game. And you know, they're really big inside, and they were in the paint for a while, and it was hard to get them, get stops late in the game, because they're under the basket. And you know, we scrambled, you know, we tried to press, and I thought, we created some turnovers there, and just figured out a way to scrap and give ourselves a chance late in the game.
You know, it's about moving on. This game's over, and we have to play Arizona State there, which would be a monster game. I mean, so we have 17 games in front of us, and we have to take it not one game at a time, but really the process of going from this game. You know, you have to be able to handle New Year's Eve day. Then you have to be able to handle New Year's Eve. Then you have to handle New Year's Day. And, you know, you add all that up. These are young guys. We have to be really smart, disciplined, and make sure we have some really good preparation. We had a very mature group leave us, go home for Christmas, come back, practice hard, and get ready for tonight's game. It's a big reason we won. We worked hard.
Okay, so that last play there, the little roll from Alkins up to Ristic, Dusan Ristic was the wild card in all this. He really was. Because you know Ayton's going to go – I didn't know Ayton was going to get 23 and 19. But you know that one of those bigs is just going to destroy it and crush it. And so for ASU, they end up losing. But here's the ultimate sign of respect. Arizona State dropped one spot in this week's AP poll. Now, the AP poll is not the give-all, tell-all of everything, especially in January. But what it tells you is those who follow college basketball, or at least pretend to follow college basketball, because some of the voting was way out of line, there's respect there for what's going on. U of A moved up from 17 to 14, moved up just three spots with a narrow victory. ASU drops one slot. ASU is ranked fourth in the nation. Michigan State's one, Duke's two, Villanova's three, Arizona State is four. I will take Arizona State at four all day long. I think U of A is a better team put together than ASU is when they play each other head-to-head. I do believe that. There's nobody that can really handle the size. I wanted to see what Romello White and Daquan Lake could do inside, and they couldn't do much. And so when they play each other again up here on February 15th, I think Bobby's got to go small on that. Bobby's got to go small. But now you have ASU that plays at Colorado and at Utah. The Utah game, Utah plays U of A on Thursday. That's going to be a war. I think ASU beats Colorado. But from here forward, let's just see how it transcends into seats being filled at Wells Fargo. Recruiting is picked up. I'll have more on that on the site. There's actually a story up on the site about it. But all in all, really good weekend there. All right, on the other side, we'll hear from Steve Keim and Michael Bidwell on what's next in terms of the Cardinal coaches and who is on the radar and who is not. That is on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. So a few other things on this Tuesday, and it's great to be into 2018 first and foremost. And thank you for being with us again and getting back on board with us. I know your schedules are all messed up. Some of you are probably off work. If you're watching this live at like 10:45 in the morning, great. If you're listening to this at 10:45 at night or on your Stairmaster or whatever, thanks for checking us out. Our website, as always, sports360az.com, sports360az.com. If you're watching this over on AZ Central Sports, we appreciate the partnership with them as well. You can check out our content on sports360az.com. Our television show is on Fox Sports Arizona. It will be Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday morning this week. Wednesday, Thursday nights, and Friday morning this week because of the holiday. And you can check that out, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ. We do just quite a bit of football, high school, college, and pro in our great state. Speaking of football, before I go back over to the Cardinals, so our buddy Jimmy Vaccaro has Alabama as a 4.5-point favorite against Georgia. The total's 47.5. This is from the South Point. And, you know, I loved the games yesterday. How could you not love not just the double overtime, but the athleticism of Georgia, the big playability of Georgia, seeing Baker Mayfield under the gun. I'm watching Mark Andrews, the former Desert Mountain tight end, try to be involved. He wasn't involved as much as I would have liked to have seen. I'm looking at Baker Mayfield wondering, is this the guy for the Arizona Cardinals? I'm actually looking at Lincoln Riley thinking, you know, is Lincoln Riley that hot young guy coming up? He probably is too early into the game. I thought Oklahoma. Eric, did Oklahoma crap the bed yesterday? 17-point lead.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
31-14.
The play before the half changed momentum, Brad.
Just a little field goal.
It wasn't a little field goal. It was a 55-yard field goal. But
3 points.
And Georgia did something that I never thought I would see against OU. OU is like Loyola Marymount in basketball.
Fast
back
break.
In the... Well, when they get you playing their style and they get ahead, they're difficult to come back on. And although OU's defense was not spectacular this year, I mean, the way their offense started the Rose Bowl and how they jumped out on Georgia early, and Georgia's playing a true freshman quarterback, although he's a very good one, mm-hmm. I just did not see a second-half comeback from the Bulldogs.
I was just amazed at the play calling and how conservative they got.
Really conservative.
Especially in overtime, if you're Oklahoma. So that kind of struck me. The late game, I don't know, whenever Alabama is not... And by the way, for those of you that are Ohio State fans, you didn't make it. Get over it. It's over. It didn't happen. So just move on. This nonsense about how, well, we would have given Clemson a better game. Or maybe the ACC wasn't that tough this year. You can always make that argument, and it's fine to argue about something that's already happened.
And when it's all said and done, Brad, the SEC has two teams in the final. So after a year of nitpicking and bashing and talking about their soft non-conference schedule and how they get layups towards the end of the year.
Which they do.
Which they do, but you have Georgia and Alabama playing for all the marbles.
The playoffs got to expand off this, though, right? I mean, we're sitting here with two games. I got to believe the Rose Bowl rating, not just because it was double overtime, the game itself just felt big. Like watching the Sugar Bowl last night did not feel big. Even they came to the game late, okay, which I don't know if – is it really that hard to schedule the games far apart?
And this is that's just such a bad look. It's just a bad look when you have a double overtime game. And then it's, oh, by the way, you can flip over to ESPN2 to catch this. Just delay the start of the game an extra 6-7 minutes. Yeah. It already got delayed 15. What's an extra 10 minutes?
Yeah, and it just didn't have a big feel about it. The Rose Bowl had a big feel about it. There's no other way to put it. In what was a dreadful Pac-12 season in the Bulls. And we'll get more into that as the week progresses. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. Eric, as always, produces. I'm Brad Sussmat. Enjoy your Tuesday.